Welcome back to Human Emotion. Today we'll be answering the question of what is an emotion? So, William James said, "To the psychologist alone can such questions occur as, why do we smile when pleased and not scowl? Why are we unable to talk to a crowd as we talk to a single friend? Why does a particular maiden turn our wits upside down?" The common man can only say, "Of course we smile. Of course our heart palpitates at the sight of the crowd. Of course we love the maiden." And so probably does each animal feel about the particular things it tends to do in the presence of certain objects. So today we're going to answer this question that William James brought up long ago of what is an emotion. As you can see here on our roadmap, we'll do it as follows. We'll first discuss some early theories of emotion, then the components of what an emotion response is, followed by two different approaches to classify the landscape of emotion, followed by some takeaway questions of the main points covered in our brief lecture today, and finally with an expert interview of an emotion scholar in the field. So let's begin here with theories of emotion. So what I'm going to do here is approach this question by time traveling together to see how different scholars thought about what an emotion was and how these theories have evolved over time, starting in ancient Greek, going through the Enlightenment, then to Darwin, William James, his predecessors, Cannon Bard, Schachter Singer, and concluding with some cognitive theories by Lazarus. So let's start first here with ancient Greek approaches to the question of what is an emotion? So as you can see here, theories about emotion stretch back as far as the Stoics of ancient Greece. Some of the main points to take home when you think about how did they answer the question of what is an emotion is first looking at Hippocrates, who said there were four humors. The four humors were black bile, yellow bile, phlegm, and blood. And emotional health really consisted of a balance between all these four humors. And when these four humors were out of balance, both mental and physical disease could take over. Aristotle really advocated this principle of moderation, essentially saying that part of what an emotion is and part of what sort of predicts emotional health is finding a balance, not having too little emotion or having too much emotion. And so he stressed that this was a really important principle of emotional functioning. Both of these theories, however, still saw emotions as somewhat inferior to or in conflict with both reason and rationality. Next, we move into the Enlightenment. So during the Enlightenment period, we see this flourishing of intellectual attention devoted to really trying to pinpoint or understand what an emotion is. And here we see philosophers such as Descartes, Spinoza, and Hume really trying to kind of get in deep to think about what an emotion is. And for example, Descartes, he provided an intricate taxonomy of emotions, a description of their bodily causes, their effects, and functions in his text, The Passions of the Soul. Perspectives on emotions from an evolutionary perspective were initiated in the 19th century by Charles Darwin in his book, The Expression of Emotions in Man and Animals. Darwin really advocated that emotions are not simply irrational, that they actually serve an important purpose for us as humans in both communication and also in aiding in our survival. So he therefore argued that emotions did evolve via natural selection and that they were not specific to humans and that we also see them in animals as well. So this work, thinking about this evolutionary approach to emotion, really paved the way for future research, not only trying to understand the function of emotion across time, but also for more recent theories looking at the physical and neurobiological kind of underpinnings of emotion today. As we go through time, we are now back to William James, seen as the father of psychology in many ways. When he thought about the question of what is an emotion, he advocated what we think of as now as the physiological approach. So he really argued that the essence of emotions is a physiological response, and that each emotion has a specific sort of profile in the body, certain patterns of heart rate, certain patterns of muscle tension. And in this way, emotions are really secondary to sort of bodily or physiological phenomena. So he would argue, for example, that you might have a stimulus in the environment, a snake as you can see here, followed by a certain physiological response in the body, such as your heart rate increasing, and that that is what would lead to the experience of an emotion such as fear. He worked with his student to sort of further push this idea of the physiological approach, and together they wrote that the perception of bodily states as they occur is the emotion. Later theories by Cannon and Bard suggested, well, no, emotions are not simply physiological phenomena, and that, as you can see here, physiological responses alone cannot explain emotion experience. So this theory really argued that instead, physiological responses are too slow. It takes a while for our heart rate to increase and often imperceptible. So this cannot account for our relatively rapid and intense emotions that often come online. So this theory went as follows. You'd see a stimulus, just as you see a snake here. This would be followed by certain patterns of subcortical brain activation, sort of registering and getting that input that this is a snake in the environment. And this would be followed by the almost simultaneous experience of both your physiological responses kicking into gear, such as your heart rate increasing, as well as the experience or subjective quality of fear. Schachter and Singer then came along and proposed what they called a two-factor theory of emotion. So here they said, the appraisal of the physiological experience defines and determines the emotion. So in other words, they suggested that physiological reactions contribute to emotion experience by really facilitating a certain kind of cognitive appraisal or way that you evaluate what's going on in your body. And that evaluation is what really defines and gives rise to the emotion itself. So again, they talked about two factors in emotion, or two stages, and they go something like this. So in the first stage, you see physiological arousal in response to an evoking stimulus, such as the snake here. And then second, you have what they thought of as a cognitive elaboration, or a way in which you're appraising the meaning of your heart rate increasing. And it's the way that you think about what that heart rate means that simultaneously gives rise to the experience of emotion or fear. So if you interpret your heart rate as a sign that something's threatening, you're likely to feel fear. If you interpret your heart rate as something exciting in the environment, you're less likely to experience fear, perhaps more likely to experience something like happiness or joy. More recent cognitive theories, advocated originally by Lazarus here, really argued that cognitive activity in the form of judgments, evaluations, or thoughts is necessary for an emotion to occur. So, for example, again, you might see a snake in the environment, and then what would happen next is you'd have some sort of cognitive evaluation that the snake is dangerous. You'd be thinking or evaluating the world as such. You would see your heart rate increasing, right, in response to sort of thinking and evaluating cognitively that the snake is dangerous, and that would lead to the fear experience. So without being able to judge, evaluate, or think about a stimulus in the environment, such as a snake, that there is no emotion without cognition. So we've sort of covered the landscape of some early theories of emotion, dating all the way to more recent cognitive theories of emotion. Now I'd like to turn to thinking about, well, what is the sort of necessary ingredients or components that make up an emotion response? So here, we'll turn now to the components of emotion. So emotions are not one single phenomena. They have multiple pieces, multiple components. The first one that you can see here is this idea that emotions have a valence. This simply means emotions have a flavor to them. They can be positive, they can be negative, or they can be neutral. Second, they have what people call an aboutness. There's something emotions are about. This is referred to as an eliciting or an intentional object. The emotion could be about a snake, for example, as we discussed earlier. But emotions rarely occur without anything to which they're about or that sort of gets them started or triggered. This third component really dates back to the early writings of Darwin, who said that emotions serve a certain purpose or function. And in particular, emotions are vital to our survival. They enable us to pursue important goals. Without having emotions, we would have a lot of trouble pursuing things meaningful to us in our everyday life. Then finally, here on the left, emotions have multiple components themselves. So when emotion is online, when it gets started, there's different pieces to what make up or characterize an emotion. And let's turn here to this multi-component response to see exactly what it means. So when we think of an emotion, it has three kind of core pieces or parts. The first is a subjective experience or qualia of what the emotion is. This is your internal representation or experience of what it feels like to have an emotion. Second is the sort of outward display of behavior. So like this woman here, when you're feeling a certain emotion like fear, you're likely to show it in your face and show it in the different kind of bodily actions or movements that go along with the emotion. And then finally and importantly, there's physiological aspects to an emotion response. So we can see this both in our brain, as you saw there, as well as in our autonomic nervous system. So things like showing changes in heart rate, changes in sweating, changes in breathing. So as much as we've talked about what an emotion is, we've talked about early theories, and we've talked about components of an emotion, I think part of what helps a lot of students really understand what an emotion is also defining what an emotion is not. So let me tell you a few things that an emotion definitely is not. An emotion is not a mood. So a mood, as you can see here, is a more long-lasting state. It can last days to weeks to even months. And unlike an emotion, it does not have an aboutness. It does not have an intentional or eliciting object. It's something more diffuse. So for example, you may simply wake up in a bad mood for no particular reason, and you may feel that way for some time. That's more of a mood state, not an emotion. Emotion is also not a feeling, though in colloquial speak, we often use the term feeling to refer to emotions, saying I'm feeling happy or I'm feeling sad. But really, feeling refers to the subjective representation of an emotion, this kind of private internal experience to the individual, whereas an emotion also has a behavioral component. We express emotions in our face. It also has a physiological response in our bodies. As you can see here on the right, emotion is also not affect. So affect is this term you'll hear a lot as we go through the course that's I think of as a broader umbrella. So it's a broader all-encompassing term and refers to general topics of emotion, feelings, and moods altogether. So under the broad umbrella of affect, emotion is just one particular component or instance. An emotion is also not a personality trait. So personality traits are stable individual differences across situations and time, whereas emotions are these more brief response, typically to something external in the environment or maybe an internal thought or feeling. And finally, emotions are not our thoughts or cognitions. Although cognitions, as Lazarus said, can give rise to emotions, cognitions themselves are something quite distinct. Cognitions do not have facial expressions, and they do not always have physiological changes in arousal that are accompanied by them. So we're now going to turn to our third point on the roadmap, which is looking at different classification systems for trying to organize these different components and pieces of emotion. And there's two main classification systems that we'll walk through today. The first, as you can see here on the left, is a classification system often referred to as the basic or discrete classification system for emotion. And here what you see is the basic nut and bolts of the theory is that emotions are discrete or specific entities or categories. They're biologically fixed, and they're universal to all humans. Some examples of emotions that fall under this perspective are what they think of as these basic, hardwired emotions that were sort of evolutionarily equipped to experience and display. These include anger, disgust, fear, happiness, sadness, and surprise. And it's these basic emotions that form the sort of primary colors of emotion landscape that give rise to more complex emotions. Things like guilt, pride, shame. And these are thought to arise from the combination of basic emotions that are culturally influenced and constructed. And as you can see at the bottom, and that we also have pictures of at the top, Some sample theorists that really sort of champion this basic or discrete classification system were Paul Ekman, René Descartes, and Sylvan Tompkins. So this is in contrast with what's referred to as a dimensional classification system to emotion. So here, emotions are not individual or specific categories, but rather they're thought of as a combination of several psychological dimensions. And you can see here a picture. This really refers to two different dimensions of an emotion response. So what we see here, you see unpleasant and pleasant. This is sort of thought of as the valence dimension of emotion, how pleasant versus how unpleasant are emotions. And this is contrasted with the arousal dimension. It says anxiety at the top and boredom at the bottom. Really, we're thinking of how highly arousing are emotions versus how sort of lethargic or low arousing are they. You can plot these two dimensions kind of side by side, perpendicular, and pick out an emotion depending on where it sort of fits on this emotional landscape. And here you can also see three kind of commonly associated theorists with the dimensional account here. You can see sort of the father of our first psychology laboratory, Wilhelm Wundt, James Russell, and Lisa Feldman Barrett. So now that we've gone through theories of emotion, components of emotion, two major kind of classification systems of emotion, we're going to conclude here with what I refer to as our takeaway questions. So these should try to help highlight what were some of the main points discussed today that you want to take home from this. And there'll be three takeaway questions that will go along with each of these lecture modules. The takeaway questions for today include, one, what are the differences between early emotion theories discussed today? How are they similar? How are they distinct? Two, what are the three components of an emotion response that we discussed today? So when you experience an emotion, what are three pieces that are happening simultaneously? And then finally, what are the two main emotion classification systems? What do they each prescribe? What are examples of emotions that arise from them? And who are the major emotion theorists associated with them? We're going to now conclude with our expert interview, who's someone we just referred to in our lecture today when speaking about the dimensional approach to the question, what is an emotion? So let's now turn to our expert interview. And this is part of a series called Experts in Emotion, where we're going to be exploring questions about emotion through the eyes of some of the most distinguished scholars in the field. I'll be speaking with Dr. Lisa Feldman Barrett about the age-old question of what is an emotion. Dr. Barrett is a distinguished professor of psychology at Northeastern University, where she directs the Interdisciplinary Affective Science Laboratory, and is also the founding editor-in-chief of the journal Emotion Review. Dr. Barrett is an internationally renowned expert on the nature of emotion and has authored more than 150 papers and chapters on emotion and emotion regulation. She's received numerous rewards for this work. This includes the NIH Director's Pioneer Award and the Career Trajectory Award from the Society of Experimental Social Psychology. So I'm going to now turn to our Experts in Emotion interview with Dr. Barrett on what is an emotion.